This is the 12 Songs of Christmas, today with Loose Cattle. My name is Alex Rawls, and the 12 Songs of Christmas is part of my effort to understand the mixed reactions people have to Christmas music. How can something so beloved by so many people be so hated by others? Today I'm joined by Kimberly Kay and Michael Cerveris of Loose Cattle. Both are actors, singers, and creative people who together have Loose Cattle, their alternative Americana band. Last year they released a Christmas album, Seasonal Affective Disorder, which hints at their attitude toward the season. Kimberly and Michael, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
So your album focused on the dark side of Christmas music. So let's start in a dark place.
Excellent. Right at home.
So you covered John Denver's Please Daddy, Don't Get Drunk This Christmas.
Yes, we did.
So first let's hear a little of it, and then you can tell us why.
Please, Daddy, don't get drunk.
Heartwarming, isn't it?
I feel the season.
Brings a tear to your eye.
So what inspired that choice?
Well, you know, it's a public service, I think. You know, it's good advice at any time of the year, really. But, I guess the impetus for the record in general came mutually from two sides of this, of exactly the question that you're looking at. Yeah. You know, I came at Christmas. I love Christmas. I love Christmas things. I like listening to Christmas music. I like collecting odd and weird fringe kind of Christmas records. And, and we were talking about the whole British thing of having a Christmas single. You know, I totally related to that and embraced that. So, that, you know, that was my relationship to Christmas. Kimberly's relationship was somewhat different.
It's not that. Yeah, it was just exactly the opposite. I worked retail during the holidays for like years and years and years, and then worked in the service industry as a waitress through school, and just like slowly came to hate hearing the music on loop, 12-hour shifts, like in restaurants, in shoe stores, and just like at first the music, I came to hate the music, and then, you know, as I got older, like bad things started to happen, and they just happened for me personally to happen around the holidays. So I started to have like this negative, this Pavlov's dog sort of thing, you know, like you hear the song and you're like, no, not that memory, please, no. And so we have this, you know, existing band together, and he's like, let's do a Christmas album. And I was thinking, no, let's never do a Christmas album. So
it started with singles. We started the band in August of 2007 or 11.
No, 2000, yeah, 10 or 11.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that Christmas, right before we all sort of went our separate ways for the holidays and home to, you know, wherever people were going home to, I said, let's all get together and we'll do a quick down and dirty recording of a Christmas song, literally like the night before Christmas. We'll rehearse it, mix it, and put it up online for, you know, friends and fans and stuff. And that'll be our little gift to the world. So we did that. We did Alex Chilton's
Jesus Christ, yeah.
Big Star song. And so we did that. And we did that for a few years running. And And then at a certain point, we're like, well, we've got half of a record already. Let's make the rest of it now. And mm-hmm. and that's what became seasonal affective disorder.
So with the John Denver song specifically, what did you do to try to make it, you know, make it more distinctly yours?
Fiddle.
Yeah, pretty much.
One word answer's okay. Fiddle.
Yeah. That pretty much catches it. Yeah. I think also because of our sort of storytelling theatrical bent, we are not afraid to kind of enter into characters and enter into, you know, making sure the listener has an experience of the story of the song, and we like songs that have stories or that tell about a character or something. So I think that's something that we maybe added to the John Denver version.
Yeah, yeah, because if you listen to the whole album, like, that song particularly gave Michael, like, a different lead narrative than a sort of character in this, you know, like, there's a little Hank and there's a little, like, sad drunk with bad childhood memories in a bar with peanuts on the floor, kind of, like, sound to his voice that's not... It's not how all of the other songs he sings lead on are. So it's, you know, it's a little Christmas sad fairy tale. And I think that was kind of like, is there a way that we can make a story out of this one song and tell it?
It's funny. That's kind of exactly the thing I was sort of going with this question.
Oh, yeah.
Because it struck me that, you know, John Denver's version, and we'll listen to it in a minute so people can hear kind of what we're talking about. But I think his version is so much a part of his own, you know, kind of, you know, Colorado, mm-hmm. you know, hippie country thing.
Yeah.
And I find the song a weird song on that record because nothing else is like it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
On the other hand, yours, like, just steers straight into the honky tonk. Mm-hmm. And sort of the question I was thinking about when I listened to it was, are you into honky tonks or the role of guy at the honky tonk?
Is there a difference, really, at the end of the day?
Is it Tuesday or is it Friday? You
know? Talking to actors, so yes.
I mean, I grew up in West Virginia, in Huntington, West Virginia, so, you know, there's a part of, like, you know, revisiting my, you know, not my literal childhood, since my father was never drunk at Christmas. but yeah, I think it's... You know, it's a fine line between those two.
Yeah, and part of, I think, my thought was that is that to some degree, you know, kind of get into the drama of the song, mm-hmm. you know, as much as the song as an idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think, like, I love pop music, but the thing that ultimately leaves me unsatisfied a lot of times is when it feels like it's just being sung to be a song as opposed to sung to tell somebody something or to take them someplace or to, you know, ask them a question when they're in their headphones or something.
Yeah, and does it sound pretty or do you feel something? You know, like, they kind of, there's a nice big wide divide between those in my head.
Sure. Let's come back to that thought in just a sec, but let's do hear some of John Denver's version, because this doesn't get a radio play in the in the malls, et cetera, in the shoe stores.
Strange, isn't it?
So anyway, here we go.
Please, Daddy, don't get drunk this Christmas. I don't want to see my mama cry. Please, Daddy, don't get drunk this Christmas. I don't want to see my mama cry. Just last year.
What a voice in that.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing you almost never hear from him is the yodeling. I mean, it's the Hank thing. I thought that was really interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, that's funny. I haven't listened to that version since...
You know, since we were picking songs, yeah.
And, you know, it's the trio who wrote that are the same trio who wrote Country Roads. It's the same three of them.
I believe that because I don't believe Country Roads any more than I believe that song.
Exactly, because none of those things, you know, the Shenandoah River, not in West Virginia.
No.
And in fact, John Denver had never been to West Virginia when he wrote and recorded the song.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm so happy to know that now. Yeah. And you realize when you hear the piano in that. That yeah. piano sounds like a piano that has never been played in a honky tonk.
No, exactly.
It's like it's played in a Shakey's Pizza.
Yeah. So true. Yeah.
So to back out, and I guess we've already started this, but what is the appeal of if you're not into Christmas songs, sort of, it seems like the answer to if you're not into Christmas songs is no Christmas songs. So kind of what's the appeal of the dark Christmas song or the sad Christmas song?
For me, like we were saying, it's a storytelling or a story hearing opportunity, one or the other. It's thinking about it like as a musician, how can I tell this? What can we use to build the story? What instruments like create the world around it? How do we put, you know, a background? How do we put props in it musically? If it's just as a listener, if it tells a good story or if it makes me laugh, if it's got a turn of phrase that's real witty, like I can love something for how it's written and still hate why it was written.
So one of the things I think about in this, and you know, one of the classics is, you know, from Charlie Brown Christmas is Christmas Time Is Here. Mm-hmm. And I always wonder if somehow that a sad Christmas song somehow feels slightly more human.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think most people's experience, you know, and we talked about this a lot while we were doing the record, is that even in the best version, it never quite lives up to either what your expectations were or the expectations of, you know, all the commercials and the movies that you've seen. And you inevitably end up feeling like you're falling short of some yardstick mm-hmm. of enjoyment of the experience. So I feel like there's sadness mixed into the DNA of Christmas. And, you know, and I suppose if you look at, you know, what technically we're supposed to be celebrating is the birth of someone who came in the world to ultimately take on the suffering of the world, and it's not going to end well for him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you're celebrating the beginning of it, you're also acknowledging somehow that, you know, where it's going to go. So I think that's kind of written into a lot of the season. We just don't look at that part of it.
Yeah, because
you know?
It's much harder to sell Alexis based on like, oh, yeah. You know, you're going to die for our sins.
Yeah, exactly. I know what happens in the last reel.
Yeah.
Run.
Okay. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. So one of the things I often think about is there's a great passage in Ian Hunter from Mott the Hoople
yeah.
in his book Diary of a Rock and Roll Star, and it's a diary. It's a diary of him of Mott touring America uh-huh. in November and December of like 72 or 74, and there's a passage in there where he basically it's like the end of the night, and he's clearly, you know, had too much red wine, and he's trying to write, and he's thinking about Christmas, and he's talking about basically how he feels like a fraud trying to even connect to Christmas right. at a point when he's basically, you know, drinking to wake up and take right. and taking pills to start to wind down.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, going across America and seeing it at its sort of at its, you know, most holiday inn degenerated.
Right.
And also at the same time having his whole all basically his rock and roll dreams are being crushed because there is sort of as like sad and tawdry and like nothing. As they're falling short in the same way that Christmas falls short,
yeah.
and he's just unable to connect to it. And I kind of wondered if that's also part of that unease with Christmas is that sense of like, at a point when how peace on earth, goodwill toward men do I feel when I right now I'm ready to road rage on some son of a bitch on the I-10?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it puts us like really directly in touch with the, you know, deep contradictory things about being a human being. You know, I think that's part of what happens at Christmas, you know.
Yeah, I was thinking, I was playing the album for my family last year around Christmas, and, you know, the same device that I was plugging in so that I could play Christmas songs for my family was the exact same device that I was like literally deleting the Twitter app off my phone just so chaos and hatred would stop exploding into the message screen. You know, it's like we've got these little windows that we're using, and it gets pretty muddy. You know, the same thing that you're using to get your good news or play your happy music or whatever is the same way you're getting your terrible news or you're hearing terrible music, and you're like, how do I filter all this? So yeah,
it does make me feel good to think that I think we made a record that, you know, that Ian Hunter would have appreciated
yeah.
at that point in his
yeah.
in his life, because that is definitely the target demographic for
no,
our record.
That's our niche right there.
So yes, yeah, so every bottle, every record now comes. If you'll actually buy a physical copy, it comes with a bottle of red wine.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, not very good red wine.
Exactly,
but cheap even more red important. Wine.
Yeah.
So when you were picking songs, what were sort of the musical balances that you were trying to sort out? How to, you know, what and what had to coexist in songs to make them work for you?
Places where two voices can blend, you know, a story that has a clear place for like a backup vocal, you know, like on this Denver tune, there's, you know, a little place where a waitress or a mother, I should say, mother says, you know, son, you better go upstairs. And we're like, okay, we've got this lead line for this gentleman. We've got this man voice. All right, cool. We've got a place for, so, you know, places for dual narrative or characters were an important mm-hmm. place. Songs that have, you know, nice room for orchestration where you can really layer a lot of instruments because we have a lot of people in our group and they're all spectacular. So trying to, what's a song that we can add texture to without losing the story, confusing people, muddling things? I think that was really important too.
And I think, you know, humor that Kimberly mentioned earlier has always been a big part of our, you know, I mean, if you couldn't figure it out from the name,
yeah.
You know, it's always, but often a, you know, a dark or satirical kind of humor mixed in with sincerity too, I think. And I think we wanted to also strike a balance between somewhat familiar tunes, but also a lot of really undiscovered, off the beaten path mm-hmm. kind of things,
yeah.
or familiar things presented in an unusual way so that, you know, you get to hear them differently. You know, you don't just hear your memory of them for the past 20 years. Whatever.
Sure. I'll tell you, one of the reasons I asked the question is because one of the things I think is always a challenge with especially with sad Christmas songs, is having them either not just become so ponderous you can't endure it,
yeah.
or having them become so, you know, so over the top that they become camp and they become a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So were there songs that you sort of discarded because you realized I can't get through this without cracking up?
Well, we did discuss for a while doing Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer.
Yep. Yeah.
And that just seemed like that was too easy.
Yeah.
It was too on the nose.
Yeah, it was
know?
Too obvious.
Yeah.
Well, here's one. This is one of my personal favorites. And so I wanted to, especially my favorite sad ones, and so I wanted to share this. Because lyrically it's so over the top, but the it's Tammy Wynette, and Tammy Wynette holds it in. She makes it worth it. So the song is called Merry Christmas, We Must Be Having One.
Silent night has never sounded any sweeter, and jingle bells ring softly in the night, and it's the season for me to be happy, 'cause this Christmas you're here.
But I think we know what the first song on Seasonal Disaffective Disorder will be,
Volume 2. Yeah.
I just love the fact that she just can't believe Christmas is working this year. And that she sounds like she will break down in tears at any moment on any syllable
yeah,
in that song.
That little hint of a cry at like every phrase. It's
great. And I love the patience of going like two full verses before you finally let the other shoe drop, you know?
Yeah, that the pedal steel player is clearly getting paid by the wine.
Definitely.
So everything about that is what I love about Christmas music, because ultimately I still find that what I like most about Christmas music is the same thing I like about all music. And that in this case, that is all, everything great about that is Tammy Wynette. You put any other singer in front of that, and that's either over the top or it misses entirely.
Yeah.
And her ability, you know, sort of matched with her history, that you can't hear that and not hear somebody who has learned to look every positive thing in her life, you know, side-eyed.
Side-eyed, yeah. Exactly, yeah.
All right, so we could do this for a long time, but let's go ahead. Y'all have things to do with your day. So thank you to Kimberly Kay and Michael Cerveris of Loose Cattle for the time.
Thank you.
Keep a track of their adventures through their individual Facebook pages and through Loose Cattle's. Are you going to be doing Loose Cattle Christmas shows this year?
Yeah, we are.
Indeed.
We're going to be in New Orleans at Chickiwawa. I think it's around the 17th or 18th, like on the Tuesday before the week of Christmas, I think. We're going to be at the Bluebird in Nashville. We're going to be up in Pittsburgh. We'll be in New York. So, yeah, we're going to do a little
Christmas tour.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Inflicting Christmas on the people, once again.
Exactly. Reindeer are ready.
So, and if you have favorite sad Christmas songs, you can share them as well at 12 Songs of Christmas on Facebook. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's show, tell your friends. Rate us on iTunes. Help others find us. So we will finish today with one more song from Loose Cattle's Seasonal Affective Disorder. This is A Truck Stop Christmas. See y'all next week.
They close the interstate. Nothing to do but wait. I pray the red tail lights in front of me. The snow is assaulting down, 12 hours from my hometown, and this ain't no way to spend a Christmas Eve. A billboard back there said there's a truck stop up ahead. So I decides to pull her over and get my